ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
When's the last time a leader left you feeling inspired, motivated, seen, and heard? In the business world, this ability has been labelled executive presence. It had its heyday in the 90s and is now on trend again. But some experts are questioning whether it's overshot its usefulness.
I sometimes think, well, if you want executive presence in your leadership, maybe just go and hire George Clooney or someone like that.
Hello, I'm Lisa Leong, and for This Working Life, what's all the fuss about executive presence? And is it more than gravitas, charisma, and swagger? No offence, George. Colin James is an executive coach who works globally with leaders to develop their communication skills.
It's amazing how this now has become such a topic and so current now. And in fact, much of our work starts with this person needs to build executive presence. It's as if there's some sort of magical description or some magical cluster of skills that shows up as executive presence. I think the word is directly related to the experience that people have on meeting someone for the first time. What's the presence that they convey, whether executive or otherwise? Then is this reinforced over time? Does that first impression turn into confirmation? Then you go, oh, my first impression was accurate, or maybe I need to adjust. And then that builds into a long-term expectation on how that person will behave. But when we talk about executives, how do they walk into a room? How do they show up on stage if they're presenting something? If they're on a Zoom call or a Teams call, what is the experience people have of them, even when they are not speaking? Because this is all part of this presence element. And the challenge for us is how do you build or create executive presence, because it is a sophisticated skill.
Well, why are people coming to you and saying, I need to create this or generate this executive presence? What's happening there?
Let me give you an example. So we're working with one of our clients here in Australia. They've got a technical executive as the chief information officer. Now, right now, AI is the big topic of the day. What do we do with our data strategy, our cloud strategy, our digital transformation strategy, and so on? So the CIO becomes a really important person at the table in the conversation. So if that person doesn't have presence, when they speak, do people listen? If that person has a point to make, does that cut through the noise and land powerfully? And if not, then they need to develop that capability. So whilst they might be technically excellent, it doesn't translate that they are communicating powerfully. So there's a combination of competence, confidence, and communication combine to create that executive presence experience.
Can you go down a level and define some of these qualities that define something like executive presence?
I don't know if you've ever gone to a new dentist and the dentist comes out and they appear nervous. I mean, what would you do? I mean, you'd probably leave the waiting room. I don't want an unconfident dentist. So likewise with executives, you don't want someone who's coming across as nervy or apprehensive or lacking the confidence of competence. And one of the things we then look at is, well, what is confidence? And how do you acquire it? You know, is it something that people naturally have? Is it a product of experience? What is it? But I've met some very confident children. So they don't have years of experience, but their nature is outgoing and expressive. Now, for those of us that are introverts, like myself, for example, I've learned how to extrovert to be an effective communicator. So one of the qualities that we start off with is how do you convey and portray confidence? And it is simple things. You know, it is the way you stand or the way you walk. It's the way you sit. It's the way you appear on screen. So for example, one of the things we have to teach everybody on this type, you know, when you're on camera, is to look at the camera. Because the majority of people look at themselves on the screen, or they look at someone else on the screen who's talking, and you say, no, eye contact is through the lens. And people go, oh, of course. Right, I didn't realize that. Because the sense of eye contact demonstrates confidence.
So confidence, competence, and communication combine to make the executive presence experience, according to Colin James. Let's get another perspective now.
I'm Megumi Miki. I am a leadership, culture, and diversity inclusion consultant. I wrote a book called Quietly Powerful, How Your Quiet Nature is Your Hidden Leadership Strength.
Megumi, I want your honest take on the term executive presence.
I find it really quite disturbing in some ways that when looking for people in leadership positions, that that's what stands out or that's what people talk about, because I do find that that's only one aspect of leadership for one, but also the idea of executive presence, not presence, but executive presence is somewhat biased towards how someone looks. So I sometimes think, well, if you want executive presence in your leadership, maybe just go and hire George Clooney or someone like that. Regardless of what they know or their judgment. I'm not saying George Clooney doesn't have these things, but, you know, if you're hiring somebody in a leadership position, maybe just hire, you know, based on how they appear and how they come across.
And have you or someone you've coached ever been told to show some more executive presence?
Totally. As you can imagine with my work around Quietly Powerful.
And what does it mean? Why are people saying this, do you think?
I think there's, and for me, the feedback I received was quite some years ago. So maybe there was still that traditional sense of what an executive or a senior leader looks like or sounds like. I think it's hopefully changing a little bit. But even then, I think there's still, if you ask why people expect it, it's almost like people who are appointing people into positions of leadership, they're kind of, they feel more comfortable when they see somebody who appears like they have executive presence. I suppose they relate it to confidence and how they come across and things like that.
Confidence and competence, interestingly.
Absolutely. So unfortunately, confidence and competence are not necessarily the same thing. So I think that's the issue. And I don't know if you've talked to Dr. Thomas Chemerapremisik.
Previously.
Yeah. So he speaks about the difference between confidence and competence, how the overlap is only 9%. So if you hire people on how they appear in terms of confidence, you may not necessarily be getting someone who's competent.
Megumi, what would you prefer we call it rather than executive presence?
So I like talking about presence, as in not necessarily executive presence, but just presence. And when I coach people around, you know, if they want to get promoted or if they want to get noticed and things like that, particularly the people who are quieter, I always suggest that they look for ways to be more present. And I look at lots of different things like physically present. You know, you can't change your physiology, but you can change your posture and your smile and things like that that makes people feel more comfortable and you appear to be more present with somebody. So that's one thing. Another thing is mentally present. You can be physically present and mentally totally absent, and that's not a great feeling as the person standing with you. So if you can be mentally present and really engaged and interacting with that person with genuine curiosity, I think that makes a huge difference. Emotionally present as well. If you've got other things going on that's bothering you, if you can put that to the side. It's related to mentally being present as well, but both mentally and emotionally present. So I think all of those things are much more important than looking like an executive.
So executive presence is more than what you see, but what if it's not in your nature to show confidence?
So here's the dilemma. When someone says, look, this is just me, this is my personality, I'm my authentic self, take me as I am. Well, may I suggest that that's kind of indulgent. Think about a parent. So a parent has had a long, hard day at work. They're exhausted. They get home and their child, their 8-year-old child, is very upset about something. Does the parent think, you know, well, authentically, I'm exhausted, I'm tired. You know, child, look after yourself, right? Because I need to care for me. No, you will step into parent mode. You'll find the resources and the energy to pay attention and support the child. Now, this is the same thing with having to understand the effect that you have if you are a leader or a manager or an executive, that you are in a role. You are fulfilling a role, and you need to step up into that role. Now, the appearance that you have, right, the appearance, shift that around. What you are describing is the experience people have of you. And if you're walking into a room without having your energy up, without paying attention outwardly and being and conveying a sense of confidence and competence, then you're going to be behind the eight ball. You'll already have compromised. So you've got to think about your audience. And I use the word audience as a collective noun for group. So people in the meeting, people on the call, people sitting in the chairs in a presentation. That's the audience. So that's what an executive needs to focus on.
Being conscious that you're playing a role is central to Colin's definition of executive presence. More on this later. Whatever you want to call it, both Colin James and Megumi Miki believe executive presence is something that can be learned. Colin thinks the traditional view of what a leader looks like is changing.
Well, the good news is that we are moving away from the pale, male and stale, right? So white, older men. Now, there's still this sort of favorability towards men and the other factors I described. So there's more diversity, of course, including women. In fact, I was in San Francisco last week, and the new CEO of a multi-billion dollar technology company is a woman. And honestly, you could feel the energy in the room, because she's only been there for 2 months, and this was their first meeting with all the leaders. And they don't quite know how to behave. But the good thing for her, of course, is that when she walks into the room, there's no question who she is. She carries herself with an aura of just powerful confidence, not arrogant, not sort of alpha. You know, she's not needing to overemphasize her status. But you just know you're in the company of someone that instantaneously conveys a person of experience and depth, and that's a presence, right? That's a presence. Now I've known her for years. She's a primary school teacher by training from Ireland, and now she's running a multi-billion-dollar technology company. Now it's taken her 27 years to get there, but hello, a primary school teacher going into the position that she is, she's done this because everywhere she's gone, she's always conveyed this presence, and that's seen her accelerate her career dramatically.
Megumi Miki has this example of being in the presence of presence.
This was a tiny Indian woman, tiny, tiny, like up to my shoulders even. Like, I'm not that tall, and she was very short, and probably in her 80s at the time that I met her. And she was a leader at a spiritual university in India. And she stood up on a stage with about 300 people in the audience. And before she said anything, I was quite far away in the audience. I could feel her presence. I was like, whoa. And I think it's not the doing, it's the being. She was just being who she was with nothing added. And what I suspect, and you know, this is how I experience people who have that level of presence, is that it's like they are sending out compassion and love and care, that they want to connect with people at that deeper level. That's how I experience these people.
As a leadership consultant who specializes in diversity and inclusion, I asked Megumi Miki if she's seeing changes at the executive levels too.
I'd hope so. But the thing is, I think a lot of people who are calling out the need for that inclusive style of leadership or inclusive style of presence are the people who are potentially looking to report to those leaders, or people who are affected by that leadership, as opposed to the people who are the decision makers of appointing those people into leadership. So, and this is my experience when I've been working with organizations, where the people who make appointments into leadership positions still talk about executive presence in the old way. Of course, slowly changing. I'm sure there are people who are seeing it differently, but I do think that there are still many, many organisations still looking for that appearance-based presence. I've interviewed quietly powerful leaders who don't appear to be the usual type of leaders, and they are incredible leaders. They're very successful. The people who work with them love working with them, and they produce amazing results. So if you're not looking at those types of leaders who may not come across as the traditional executive presence type of leaders, then you may be missing out on very high quality leadership in your organization. You're also missing out on the diversity of leadership styles.
Can you give us an example of a leader who's high profile, who has that presence, but doesn't fit in the old mold?
Sure, there's probably several, but the most recent person I spoke to was a CFO at a global law firm, a global CFO. And he publicly says that he's an introvert. And it's not just about introversion, by the way. He's also a black man. He has an amazing radio voice, actually. he's got an amazing voice. I think that is to his advantage in terms of executive presence, because I think voice is also considered part of that in the old traditional sense. But he also says that he has to manage his energy. He can't be out and about all of the time, but he manages his energy and still connects with people. And so that's how he manages to be effective. But in terms of what you might expect of an outgoing type of leader or executive presence, he may not fit that mold. And also being a black man, he did say that there has been challenges of biases and so on. So you can imagine that will be the case.
I mentioned earlier, I'd come back to that idea about playing a role to build your presence. Colin James is actually a self-confessed introvert. So what did he do to change his energy and the way people experience him?
To this day, if I have to go somewhere where there's going to be a crowd of people, particularly in social environments, I find it get apprehensive because I know I'm going to be so exhausted from it. But the idea of being an effective communicator, to be an effective leader, I realized that I had to learn how to express in a more engaging way. And one of them is how you use your face. I mean, I just learned how to animate facially, and it took conscious practice. And even smiling, it still feels a bit strange to me, but I have to remind myself to smile. I know it sounds odd, but particularly in context like when I'm on a stage, right, when there's an audience, because the people are looking at you and sometimes there's a camera on you. And so your face becomes a reference point on the messages you want to get across. So if you want to say, this is an exciting time, show excitement in your face. Otherwise, it sounds disingenuous.
Can I flip it then? So I am short and I smile a lot. Can I talk about the term gravitas? Because that has been used against me for smiling too much because I'm a short person who nobody will take seriously if I'm always laughing and having a good time, especially in the executive table. So can you unpack the word gravitas and what that might mean to someone like me and not having it leveled as a sword against me?
Kamala Harris, now running for president of the United States for the Democratic ticket, is now being criticized for laughing too much, as if this is somehow detracting and it signifies that she's not a serious person. So there's a correlation between gravitas and seriousness, and this is one of the things that is changing around the executive table, is they're not suffering from terminal seriousness as much as they used to. Look, there are environments where it is serious. You know, the tone and experience of conversations around the board table is often very formal. There's a quality of formality which is necessary in a governance position. So it's not a time for flippancy or jokiness. It's a time of dealing and working with an agenda of work. And so that requires a certain solemnity, which does come across as it has weight. It's got gravity. It's gravitas. One of the things I'd suggest for people, though, is to build range. when people say, "Oh, you know, I'm just that's me. I'm just a happy, energy bunny type person, and I don't see why I need to adjust." Well, you do. You need to adjust. It's appropriate to context. The challenge, though, is knowing how to manage it in context. And I've seen some people who aren't naturally expressive, extroverted by nature, and have a playful energy. They have to bite their tongues, right? Because every cell in their body is going, "Lighten up! It's okay!" Because they get kind of dragged down by the seriousness of things. But you know what? That's part of the game, right? It's part of the game. And work is a game that you've got to learn to play. Work is theater that you've got to learn your role. And that's why it's called a role. What's your role in the organization? And if you're not permanently in the role, you are acting in the role. And then you have a performance appraisal. You are appraised on the performance. I mean, this is what actors are. They perform. And in fact, at work, you are performing.
Colin, do people challenge you on this, the idea that you're playing a role?
They do. And they'll say, "Well, are you being inauthentic?" This is the big one right now, right? Authenticity. For me, authenticity is much deeper than the experience of someone. It's also to do with underlying intention. What's your intention? Are you here in service of the organization and the people that report to you or the people you work for? And are you authentic in your motivation and so on? But when we say authentic, we also have got to recognize that authenticity emerges from competence. So when you say to a leader, "Lead authentically," well, do you know how to lead? Do you know how to communicate? Do you know how to frame messages that connect with people in the roles that they occupy so it makes sense and meaning to them, that allows them to turn that into behavior and encouragement as well? So you've got to learn the competence that allows you to express, communicate, connect powerfully. And then that ability to bring your intention and motive to the surface, that's being authentic. But it does require competence. So authenticity is a component of leadership. It's not a be all and end all.
Colin, then, what's your final advice to aspiring leaders who want to develop executive presence or something like that?
Years ago, my mentor, a guy called Marvin Ogre, said to me, "Confidence is an act of equality. There's no one better than you and there's no one less than you." And I think that's a lovely way to start, right? So when you walk into any room with having to work alongside anyone, do not be intimidated by status. Do not be overwhelmed with someone's power. What we look at people with compassion and curiosity. And that kind of is an equalizer. And you realize that, we're human beings all struggling to make sense of this thing called life. We know there's an inevitable outcome. How can I be effective, productive, and contributing, really? And just having that thought that, look, there's no one better than me. There's no one less than me. Let's do this together. I think that provides the seeds for confidence and starts the journey to executive presence.
Thanks to executive coaches Colin James and Megumi Miki. You can find out more about them on our website. What are your thoughts on executive presence? Drop us a line on that topic or any other work-related ideas and stories via our email address. It's thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. Next time, how do we build an inclusive workplace? One where we not only attract a diverse range of people, but we actually keep them and bring out their best.
Everything's sensory friendly. We can dim lights whenever we need to anywhere in these offices. The acoustics are really good here. What you're looking at is just my brain kind of in action.
I'm heading out of the office to a neurodiverse friendly workplace to find out what they're actually doing. You've been listening to This Working Life with me, Lisa Leong. It was produced by Michelle Weeks, mixed by Matthew Crawford on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. Until next time, work it, baby.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.